Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. This is the Leaders Toolbox with the host, Fire Chief and Dr. Richard Gassaway. If you do have any questions for Chief Gassaway in this podcast, please send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Rich, thank you again for joining us this month, and can you tell us what we have in store for today's show?
Thanks for having me, Pete. Thanks for the listeners and all of your feedback that you give us by email back to the podcast show. We appreciate that. I'm very excited about today's show. I have a number of really good guests with me today, and we're going to be taking on a topic that is kind of new and different for Leaders Toolbox. We usually take questions from the listeners, but this month's show is based on a conversation that I had with a young man a couple of months ago. He contacted me, and he was looking for some coaching and for some advice for his career, and I spent a couple hours in the evening talking with him about his fire service career and some of the challenges he was having. And in the process of having that discussion, he revealed to me that he had attention deficit disorder and hyperactivity disorder. And we spent some time talking about how those things have challenged him and created some opportunities for him, but also have caused him some issues within the firehouse. And we talked about some of those, and I hope I gave him some advice that was helpful to him. But the light bulb came on that there are probably a number of firefighters out there who are have been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder and are struggling to work through those challenges. And I thought it would be a great topic for a podcast. So what I did is I invited some guests on today, and we have with us Will Ball, the fire chief of the Williamsport, Maryland Fire Department, Neil Shostrom, a firefighter with the Roseville Fire Department, April Levesque, a psychologist with Gary Fischler and Associates, and we have Dr. Gary Fischler with Gary Fischler and Associates. And I'll start by telling you a little bit about Dr. Fischler. Gary earned his doctorate in clinical psychology from the University of Minnesota in 1984. He's an adjunct assistant professor in psychology at the University of Minnesota and an adjunct faculty member at Argosy University, the Minnesota School of Professional Psychology. He and his staff provided thousands of pre-employment and fitness for duty examinations for more than 100 public safety agencies at the federal, state, and local levels. He helped revise the current International Association of Fire Chiefs guidelines for fitness for duty examinations and currently sits as the chair of the Fitness for Duty Evaluation Guideline Revision Committee. He recently completed a Department of Justice research project designed to identify the predictors of officer integrity problems. He's presented nationally on these topics numerous times and has authored or co-authored more than a dozen professional papers and a book related to the interface between mental health, legal issues, and workplace concerns. He's a court-appointed psychological examiner and a past chair of the Minnesota Psychological Association Ethics Committee. And I'd like to pause and say welcome to Dr. Gary Fischler.
Well, thank you, Rich. Very, very kind introduction.
I appreciate having you with me. Also with us today is one of Dr. Fischler's associates, Dr. April Levesque. April earned her doctorate in from Central Michigan University in 1994 and completed an internship at Hammond University in Philadelphia. Her experience includes 10 years as a staff psychologist and a supervisor at Scott County Medical Scott County Mental Health Center. Her current interests and expertise include pre-employment and fitness for duty evaluations for safety-sensitive positions, including police officers and firefighters, and disability and rehabilitation examinations, in addition to her Levesque also has attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Now I'll pause and welcome April to the show.
Thank you, Rich.
Appreciate having you. With us also is Neil Shostrom. Neil is a firefighter with my department, Roseville Fire Department, and Neil is a career firefighter with us, and he has also been diagnosed with attention deficit disorder, and I invited Neil to come along and share with us his experiences and challenges that he has had. So welcome, Neil.
Thank you.
And finally, I have Chief William Ball, who is the fire chief in the Williamsport, Maryland Fire Department, and he's a career firefighter with the Hagerstown Fire Department. I've known Chief Ball for more than 30 years, and since he was actually just a child, we grew up in the same neighborhood, and our paths went different directions at some point. He ended up in Maryland and I in Minnesota, but from the time that he was just a young child riding a bicycle, I can remember him playing around our neighborhood, and he also has attention deficit disorder and has worked successfully through that challenge to rise to the position of a fire chief, and he'll be sharing with us some of his perspectives, both as the person who has the disorder and from the perspective of a chief officer who has to manage firefighters with those special challenges. So welcome, Chief Ball.
Well, thank you, Chief. I'm honored to be a part of this program. It's very dear to me personally and professionally, so let's have some fun.
Okay. Well, we're going to start out with giving the program to Dr. Fischler and Dr. Levesque and giving them the chance to define for us what is attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, and then share with us also some of the general symptoms that somebody might display if they had the disorder.
Okay, which one of us should go, April?
You go ahead, Gary.
All right, I'll take this one, and maybe actually maybe we can edit that segue.
Oh yeah,
out.
Edit the segue out.
Yeah. Sure, I'd be glad to describe some of the features of attention deficit disorder, and as sort of a initial disclaimer, I think it's important to realize that any psychiatric diagnosis, ADHD is a psychiatric diagnosis, and like any psychiatric diagnosis, having one symptom or one feature or even a couple of features doesn't necessarily mean that anyone has the disorder or diagnosis. That people are diagnosed with this disorder, first of all, if they have a number of symptoms, and also if the symptoms are severe enough, if untreated, to cause some type of impairment in either social or occupational functioning. So there has to be some functional problem, and the symptoms really have to be over a certain threshold. So, for example, one of the key features of ADHD is forgetfulness. So, you know, if you're like me and you half a dozen times a week you walk into a room and can't remember why you went into the room, then that doesn't mean you have ADHD. It maybe it means you're preoccupied with something else, or you're getting a little older, or you know, a variety of things. But it doesn't necessarily mean you have ADHD. So with that as a disclaimer, let me go through what a number of the features are of the disorder. The primary symptoms or features of ADHD are inattention to a variety of stimuli, and that might be related to listening to directions, making careless errors due to lack of attention, not following through on instructions, having difficulty organizing tasks. A very important feature related to inattention has to do with the level of interest or excitement related to the stimulus. So something that's subjectively interesting to the individual, for example, let's say video games, which a lot of children are very interested in. Those types of stimuli, those stimulus-rich types of environments, usually people can attend to very well. It's the more mundane, what I would consider mundane or tedious things, homework, schoolwork, paperwork, attending to a variety of details that are that would require a higher level of vigilance. So forgetting things, losing things, getting distracted by things, multitasking, these are all features of the inattention related to ADHD. And then there's there's another component, a larger component of ADHD, which is the there's the A in ADHD, which is attention, and then there's the H, which is hyperactivity. And in hyperactivity or impulsivity relates to a sense of restlessness, of having difficulty sitting still, and may lead to things like fidgeting, talking excessively, blurting things out, having difficulty waiting one's turn to do things, making careless or impulsive errors again. So those are the sort of things that relate to ADHD. And I should add that ADHD, by definition, is thought to be neurologically based and has onset at an early age, prior to age 7. So it's not something that comes on later in life, doesn't come on in adolescence. It might be diagnosed later on, but the symptoms first come on in early childhood. And generally speaking, not always, but most of the time, the symptoms do become less severe with age. So some children grow out of it entirely. Many children grow out of it partially. Some children never grow out of it and have significant symptoms throughout their lives. So I think that would give us a thumbnail sketch of what the disorder is.
Okay. April, maybe you could help us by describing some of the behaviors that you might see firefighters display. And I know Gary, kind of touched on big picture perspective, but maybe more, close to the firehouse behaviors that might be displayed by somebody who has attention deficit and hyperactivity disorder. What are some of the things that maybe their associates or their bosses might be observing? You know, as you describe this, I would suspect that the listener might say, yes, I have an employee who I know has ADHD. They've told us that, and these are kind of the things that I see them doing around the firehouse. What might that be?
For example, I think some of the disorganization or the inability to organize is something that would probably be seen. For example, I imagine lockers need to be fairly well organized. Everything needs to be put in a certain place so that when there's a call, people can quickly get to their things. People with ADHD may have a more difficult time organizing their things, and they may be forgetful, get on the truck with having forgotten something that's really important in on the road or at the scene. So the disorganization, the forgetfulness, forgetting items that are really important, the distractibility, like Gary said, in highly exciting situations, they may be able to attend to what they're specifically doing. However, multitasking may be somewhat challenging due to some of the inability to attend to a lot of things at the same time. They may be able to follow one or two instructions, but that last one may fall off. In the firehouse, doing the daily chores and daily activities that they're responsible for, if there's a routine, they might have a better chance, but if things change up, they may forget to do some part of it. For example, if they're kind of told by someone on the fly, make sure you do these kinds of things tonight, and then don't have an opportunity to write those down, chances are they may forget some of those activities that were supposed to be done. Those are some examples. In meetings, they have a real hard time following lectures and that kind of thing. So school in general can be rather difficult, and they need to learn skills in how to stay engaged in the lecture, regardless if the lecture is exciting and interesting to them. Sometimes socially they have some difficulties due to their inattentiveness, drifting off. Like if someone's having a conversation and they're participating in the conversation, the other person may say something that, you know, we all kind of wander off at times. People with ADHD probably have a higher incidence of kind of wandering off and reconnecting in the middle of the conversation, and then socially they look like they're not interested. They look like they don't care about their fellow firefighters. So sometimes they will be accused of just not being interested or empathetic with other people.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Neil, the challenges of ADD and ADHD, don't start when you come into the fire service. Maybe they present some new challenges when you come into the fire service, but share with the listeners some of the challenges you had growing up and maybe in school and maybe the first jobs you had that were non-fire service related, and then how that has segued into your fire service experience.
Sure. For me, it's been something that's kind of been, as they described, a part of my life since I was a young child. And for our family, it was kind of a matter of always seeming to be in classes and distracted or not paying attention, or, you know, much like they had described with the not being able to focus on a lecture, focus on, you know, the way things other students would be doing. And that challenged me for a long time, pretty consistently all the way through elementary school, junior high, and senior high. And it wasn't until I was a freshman in college that it really started to come to a point where I wasn't able to manage sitting through a lecture that had no relativism to, you know, what I was doing in my life. For example, sitting through a biology lecture really took a lot of effort for me, and it became very difficult to maintain a good skill set or a good grades to those types of classes. And it was at that point that we finally thought, you know, maybe something else is causing me to have these struggles. And we went through, we went through the process of meeting with a psychologist and being evaluated. And initially, they were able to provide me with a medication that actually helped me to stay focused and to stay on track a little bit more. But it didn't. It almost seemed to be more of a problem with the things that were less interesting, and that sort of comes natural for me. The things that are less interesting become easier to forget about, to ignore, or just to pay attention to something else. You know, the details slip your mind. And when I was taking the medication that was prescribed, it seemed to help a little bit, although it kind of left a feeling of, you know, geez, I'm being medicated for this, and this seems strange. And along with that was also some technique changing for me, and I hadn't seen it be a huge problem with jobs, mostly because I was in some fairly fast-paced environments that didn't have me focusing on very long projects. So I was in a, you know, working in retail, you're with a customer for a very short amount of time. You're exposed to them for, you know, maybe 25, 30 minutes, and then you move on to the next thing, and you're not really worrying about a project that will span multiple days, months, weeks, or even years. And it wasn't until I started to work in the fire service and work with projects that were spanning a much larger time that I was comfortable with that I start to see some of these challenges coming back to me. And really the challenges is trying to stay focused on those small details over a long period of time. And I found the best tool for me is to take lots of notes and lots of reminders and maintain, you know, a project schedule so that there's some beginning, there's some middle, and there's some end. And having that structure really helps me to focus on not missing something, especially as it relates to the fire service. You know, as we can all relate in our respective departments, the implementation of a new, you know, fire truck or a new procedure can take several months or even years for that to occur, and having to track that can be very important. So I've used some, you know, mostly for me as being a little bit younger generation, electronic methods for tracking that stuff. But that's really been the biggest thing for me, is keeping track of things, keeping notes, having some reminders, having a pretty strict calendar or a pretty strict schedule really helps me to focus on the details and not lose those details.
Okay, thank you. Chief Ball, describe what it was like for you growing up with this disorder and maybe some of your challenges earlier on in your career, you know, before you became a fire chief.
Well, after I kind of drove my mother nuts, she was an educator and knew that something wasn't right. I had a great pediatrician, being 42 years old now, back when I was in kindergarten and first grade. This was, you know, very new, and especially with administration of medications. My mom and between my mom and my my father and our pediatrician, you know, they were able to put a good plan together for me and even my brother who eventually had the same thing that they by getting on the medication educationally, I was able to get focused and achieve educationally what I needed to do. But I contribute a lot of my self-focus is to the fire service because of that ever-changing environment and excitement that you want to be a part of, and developed a different passion for me that besides the medication helping me in the classroom, it helped me a lot of self-focus with studying and becoming so entrenched into the fire service along the time. And as like Neil, it was challenging through the elementary school and middle school years and high school years, because for me it was because you took that medication where you're different, you know. It's maybe like some kids today that are diabetics that, you know, have to go to the nurse's office to have a shot. For me, it was, you know, taking my medication when I needed to get through the day, and we made a lot of great strides. As with college, I was able to, you know, stay medicated, stay focused, and have somewhat of a life plan. And then after college is when I went off of medication, and that challenges really started to begin, because I was still focused towards the fire service, but it was everyday life that, you know, and managing the other challenges that are confronted with you with, you know, getting married and having children and going through a divorce, that it kind of made me rethink of where I was as a youth and where I was going as an adult. I wasn't still growing. And that's when I went to my family doctor, and we were able to put a plan together, and I was able to get back on the medication. And that's been a tremendous help. But you still, even though you're on medication, I still struggle with a lot of the same things that Neil does with, you know, making sure that you have a detailed calendar and, you know, all the different notes. And if you don't write something down, you know, making sure that you have all those attention to details. And that was one of the challenges that I had, was overcoming that. And I think that's made me personally a better person, because I do pay a lot more attention to the details as I've grown in the fire service and been involved with, you know, other occupations with the fire truck industry and building specifications and things. That challenged me to pay attention to those details and do a little better at the project management and time management. So...
thank you. April, I'm going to put you on the spot. I don't know that we had discussed this as being on the agenda, but it kind of flagged up for me to give you the opportunity to share how the challenges that you had in your younger years and you know, transitioning into the work world and maybe some of the things that you had to work through.
I think that one of the things that happens that was different for me is I don't have the hyperactivity component of ADD. And so a lot of kids who don't have that hyperactivity, they're not identified as early because they're not out of the seat, they're not running around, they're not doing things that are disruptive. And sometimes they end up having, especially in my age group, ADHD was not something that was really being looked at or diagnosed really in my school system. And so a lot of times they look at learning disabilities and those kinds of things. I think my son was inaccurately diagnosed with a learning disability, And then in senior high, he was diagnosed with attention deficit disorder. They put him on medications, and he went from a kid that was getting poor grades to getting straight A's. So I think that sometimes if you don't have the hyperactivity component, people just don't identify it as much. For me, I discovered very early in age, at an early age, that the first day of school was as difficult for me as the last day of school, because I learned that if I procrastinated at all, I would be completely unable to get the work done. Due to kind of the attention difficulties, the distractibility, I couldn't cram. You know how people will say that they studied, you know, all night long. They stayed up and crammed for a test. Well, there was no way. There was no cramming in my life because I couldn't pay attention for that long. I have to do things in short spurts and then do something else and then do another short spurt of things because the distractibility and inattention. So I learned at a young age that if I started reading what I was supposed to read the first day of class, and I started underlining everything and taking notes from the books. If I started taking notes and sitting in the front of the lecture hall, if I interacted with the teacher, if I in some way engaged in boring topics that made me be able to stay focused, that's how I was able to kind of get through college and graduate school. And it was interesting because I also feel that it was kind of a benefit for me, because college for me was just as hard, or high school and college were just as hard. School has always been really difficult, and I learned study skills that a lot of people that don't have learning problems or attention deficit problems don't learn, because it comes natural. They listen, they remember, they read it once, they remember. Well, in graduate school, it's a much higher level of learning, and I found that the study skills I had really helped me compared to the other students, because I knew that I had to organize my studying. For example, I was never a list maker before, but in graduate school I became very much a list maker. And I would check off each of the assignments as they got done so that I didn't miss out on completing something. I would make priority lists so that I knew what needed to be done, when it needed to be done, so that I wasn't, like, pushing up against a deadline going, oh, my God, I have to get this done in 6 hours, because there's just no way I could have. So those are some of the things that kind of affect when you don't have the hyperactivity, you don't always recognize it. And I think that the inattentive part can be just as challenging, especially as adults.
You know, I would also interject that having known April for a number of years, she's one of the most highly motivated and hardest working people you'd ever want to meet. And I think that's an important quality when dealing with something, like this, because as she's talking about her challenges, it's clear that completing the schoolwork was significantly harder than it might be for other people of similar intelligence. And so the motivation really needs to be there.
Yeah, Gary, I've made the same observation of both Neil and Chief Ball, having worked with both of them, is that they have an incredible work ethic because of, I mean, maybe this contributes to it, is that they know how much harder they have to work at things, and they develop that into a routine that becomes a part of their life. Mm-hmm. For Gary, could you offer some advice for firefighters who might be challenged with ADD or ADHD?
You know, the first thing that I would recommend would be to get a thorough professional assessment. That accomplishes two things. First, although there are no blood tests, there are no physical tests for attention deficit disorder, there are psychological tests that measure concentration, sustained attention, and behavior that contributes to the disorder. And a thorough psychological examination, specifically geared to addressing and identifying what specific symptoms or problems an individual has will go a long way to try to remediate that. I don't think there's a one-size-fits-all type of strategy that you can use with every person with ADHD. So I think it's important, just like what April said, that she doesn't have the hyperactivity part. Now, so strategies for April might be significantly different than other individuals who do have the hyperactivity part and maybe have less the attention and concentration component. So I think it's very important to get a thorough assessment to identify strengths and weaknesses and specific problems that might occur. The other part of that, of course, is to identify potential treatment options. The most common treatment option is medication, but frequently the medication is prescribed either by a pediatrician in childhood or by a general doctor in adulthood, and I would recommend that medication be prescribed by a psychiatrist who has experience and who specializes. Psychiatrists really specialize in the biological components of psychiatric disorders, and are usually are in a better position to be more knowledgeable regarding medications, medication side effects, dosages, and so on and so forth. I think those two things, an assessment of strengths and weaknesses and an assessment to see if medication is an option with regard to treatment, I think would create the most advantageous situation possible for a firefighter before they even step into the fire station. As far as how to... were you also asking what to do in the fire station or at work that might help a firefighter?
Yeah, I think so. That would be beneficial for a firefighter who says whether they've been diagnosed or not. You have a firefighter who has the forgetfulness, the inattentiveness, the hyperactivity, the impulsivity, maybe they have or haven't had the official diagnosis, but they have some of these challenges. I'm looking for some things that they could do that would help them be either more productive or even socially more accepted by their peers, because I know my observation has been that sometimes people who display the kind of behaviors you described as being more classical of the disorder tend to take some grief at work.
Yeah. Well, I would caution all of your listeners to focus on the behavior presented and not jump to conclusions with regard to diagnosis. And the fact is that many of the symptoms of ADHD can be caused by other psychiatric problems. I mean, there are lots of psychiatric problems that result in attention and concentration difficulties or memory lapses or even impulsivity. So it's important really to understand the source of, to understand first of all the behavior and treat the behavior, but also the source of the behavior. But assuming that a firefighter has had a professional assessment and is reasonably confident that they really have this problem related to ADHD, there are a number of things that I think the firefighter can do and the supervisors can do. The first thing I think is to ask the firefighter, what are the problems? Do an assessment, do a on-the-job assessment as to what kinds of things have been difficult, what kinds of things do they think would benefit from? Because very frequently, just as April is describing, the individual who's affected may have the most understanding or insight into what they need or what can help them. In general, things like avoiding multitasking, getting into a situation where there's a lot of stuff going on at the same time. And that's hard in the fire services because there is a lot of stuff going on frequently. But to the extent possible, to have an individual being able to focus on a more limited number of of things at the same time, and not put them into a situation where they have to expand their ability to concentrate even more. Sometimes, and depending upon an individual's specific job, creating an environment that you can't ever create a distraction-free environment, but trying to create an environment where the individual can concentrate and focus more, if especially if they're doing administrative tasks. When they're fighting fires, you can't really do that. But in day-to-day administrative tasks, that in some ways may present a lot of difficulties for them. Another thing to do would be to overlearn tasks. So training is essential, the training, the individual really needs to attend to training, pass the training, and really feel comfortable that they can perform the tasks in a crisis or emergency. Now, that's not different for other firefighters, but it's important for that firefighter, a firefighter with ADHD, to understand that they really need to take that criteria level seriously, because they're going to be challenged more than the average firefighter when they get into that emergency situation. So they really have to make sure that they learn their lessons, learn them well, and learn them over and over again, so they're very well prepared. April, do you have other suggestions?
The one that you were just talking about, I think, is really valuable when we're talking about multitasking they may need to do. If there are a lot of things that need to happen on a fire scene or on a medical scene, if they have really kind of root memory for exactly what needs to happen, I think there's much less chance of being forgetful and forgetting things. So it's like over-practicing so that something becomes second nature to do rather than having to stop and think. And I think that's true for lots of situations, but for the person that has ADD, I think it's even more important kind of to do the overlearning. Also, again, I think that we have to acknowledge that this is a disorder, so that means that people have to work a little harder to overcome some of the difficulties. So they maybe need to develop checklists to make sure that all of their equipment is exactly where it's supposed to be and exactly as needed after each time they go out on the truck. So that when they come in, they know that first I grab this, then I grab this, then I grab this, so they don't forget part of their equipment. Additionally, like Gary was saying about decreasing the distractibility, when they are given tasks that require more concentration, to provide them some kind of an area where they're not in the midst of everybody else doing, the TV's going and they're doing, other people in the house are doing other things, they are given an opportunity to separate themselves so they can focus on the task. That goes for their training, too. If they're training in the middle of an area where there's lots of other activity going around, it's going to be much more difficult for them to focus on the training. So as much as possible, providing training that doesn't have so many distractions. Taking notes, giving them the opportunity, especially in training, to take notes on each step, and taking notes as far as like having checklists of things that they have to finish in the house and that kind of stuff, just really doing things that help them organize and remember. Pretty soon, if they have a checklist and they check it on a regular basis, it becomes part of their memory and they will remember each time. If they are going to be given new tasks and it's not an emergency situation, give them the opportunity to write down those tasks rather than just telling them on your way out the door and expecting them to remember. Those kinds of things.
Okay. Neil, what kind of peer-to-peer advice would you have for a listener out there who may benefit from some of your experiences? You've lived with this challenge for a long time. Give some advice. And I know, using Gary's caution, everybody displays differently, and there's different things in play here. But based on your experiences, what peer-to-peer advice would you offer?
Well, I think some of the things that stand out in my mind, they talked briefly about the training, and for us,
Training is what makes our, makes up the vast majority of what we do.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
For me, it's a matter of doing it a couple of times. If raising a ladder, for as an example, and tying off the ladder is something that one person can pick up on in just one, sitting and doing it one time. For me, it's take it a couple of times, and then maybe it's spend some time alone with that where I'm not in a large group where other people can, I don't want to use the word intimidate, but for lack of a better word, intimidate me and just give me that time alone to kind of figure out how it works and then put that into my mind as a trained item and a system and making that a habit. Like April had said, keeping things organized, I try to have my locker laid out the same way every day and I put my gear away the same way as I take it out the same way. And some of that's a routine, and I would encourage people to establish those routines. It can be challenging for the fire service because, for the career firefighters out there, a lot of them work a rotating schedule, and I've found now a rotating schedule is extremely challenging because my body is never able to establish the routine of, this day, and this day, you're going to come to work, and you're going to come to work and do the same routine so that you don't miss something. So I've had to establish routines every time I walk into the firehouse for for a shift. I do the same process. I follow the same footsteps and trying to eliminate the opportunity for me missing something and taking a lot of notes. Like I said, I have a handful of technical devices that I take notes on and I keep a schedule on. And keeping on top of those things really has been a helpful benefit for me. So having something that's central for you that you can remember and then make that a habit, if you're going to carry a BlackBerry or an iPhone or something like that, make sure you develop a habit so it's always with you. And much like everyone feels strange if they don't have their wallet in their pocket, make it so it feels strange if you don't have that with you to take those notes on or to check that schedule. And those things have been very helpful for me.
Good. Chief Ball? Go ahead, April.
I just wanted to add something about the social aspect that you had mentioned and you forgot to touch on. I think that, the distractibility sometimes we were talking about can make people feel like, wow, he doesn't even care or she does not even pay attention. And I think we as people who have ADD, if somebody wants to have a conversation with us and wants our attention, we need to ask them, could we turn the TV off? Could we go into the other room where there's not other conversations so that I can focus on what we're saying? And I think that we need to just be kind of assertive about telling people that we need to just, get away from the distraction. That's one way that I think we can help ourselves focus better on conversations and not appear so thrifty.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good advice. Chief Ball, what are some of your peer-to-peer advice nuggets?
Well, working in a career fire department system, there are lots of social challenges because of all the diverse personalities and also in the volunteer fire service. And first is to talk about being in the career fire service. You're living with people that you work with every day, and sometimes them not understanding what you have, and maybe even you're initially embarrassed by saying that you have this disorder, but then as you start to educate them a little bit more, they are able to accept you. A lot of times when when I can observe in a room to see if someone even has the attention deficit or attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in some of our young youth, I see a lot of the same personality traits that I had as a child. That you're very quick to become interrupted to a conversation, that you want your point to be heard. When you just really have to challenge yourself to, have that little voice in the back of your head that says, wait your turn, and be able to speak constructively and staying on focus on topic with what's being taught or the conversation that's being held within the fire station. And because you're very impulsive to react or to have a to be a part of that environment or that team, especially if you're new to that. And if you get labeled too early in those sociological circles, you can get labeled as a know-it-all, or somebody that doesn't really want to be involved. And once these people find out about who you really are, and you always come back, months, years later, to say, that person's a pretty good guy, but it just took you a while to get to know him. But as a leader, especially when you're dealing with a disciplined situation, I've had to do a lot of self-training to make sure that I'm focused on the conversation and turn off the telephone in the office, turn off the BlackBerry or the cell phone or the chimes for the emails. So you're giving that person your utmost attention, and that you know what they're going to be talking about is important, and that you have your own challenge of making sure that you're focusing and taking the notes. And I have to agree with Neil 100%. Thank goodness that we have the electronic devices that we have today, because I've had more pads of paper with notes written down on it, washed and dried, than I'd like to count. And losing little pieces of paper you write things down on, but taking the notes and being organized and understanding what you need to get accomplished is very important. And I guess if you know that you have this and you're dealing with it, don't be afraid to share it constructively with your coworkers, and that you're no different than they are. You just got a little something else going on in your body, and that sometimes patience is a virtue. Because I know when I was a youth, thank goodness that I did have Rich and some other fine mentors in my life that could help me keep focused. And when I was getting a little out of control with different things, that or having some impulsive behaviors, that they were able to pull me aside and give me that constructive criticism to help me get back on a neat pathway. And I also strongly recommend routines. The better the routine you have, the better you're going to be in life.
Okay. Well, thank you. Thank you for that advice, Will. Well, Will, you had made an interesting point and observation about the potential stigma that might come along with being diagnosed and how others might view you and treat you in light of that. April, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, as when we do pre-employment evaluations, it's not unusual for me to, we ask about if they were diagnosed with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder as a child. And a lot of them will really downplay, I was on medication, but it's not a problem anymore. And when I ask further questions, it's like they were on medications through college or through, their senior year in high school, and then they went off because they just didn't want to, ultimately, I think they just didn't want to deal with the stigma at all. It's true that some people do grow out of it and they don't have as many symptoms. But I think there's also a tendency with the people that are applying for public safety positions to not acknowledge or not want to have the stigma of attention deficit disorder because they think that they won't get the job. And I have even talked to people in during the pre-employment and suggested to them that if they find that they are having difficulty again, to get another assessment, because it's more valuable to get treated and to acknowledge that you have these problems and to work through them than to pretend that you've never had problems in these areas and then find yourself getting in trouble, not being able to pay attention and learn the things you need to, not being on medications when they have been helpful for you. So I think that helping people understand that they're not going to be fired because they're on medications. And in actuality, if you're not getting your disorders treated, that's more of a problem.
That's good advice. The last area of advice that I want to delve into, and I'll refer it back to Gary, and we've touched a little bit on this, but I'd like to see if there's anything specific. In the way of advice for supervisors or managers of employees who might be displaying the kind of behaviors podcast, the inattentiveness, the hyperactivity, impulsive, fidgeting, restless, blurting things out, and I know these are just, there can be lots of things that contribute to that kind of behavior, but as it relates to ADHD, if you have an employee whose behavior is challenging for you as a supervisor, what are some of the things that you might be able to offer to them as advice here?
Sure. Well, depending on the severity of the problems, you know, if we take one at one end of the spectrum, you can picture a situation where maybe a chief who has ADHD notices some of these behaviors in one of their firefighters, and they pull them aside and they say, you know, I've noticed these things, and have you ever thought about getting an assessment for it? Have you ever thought about getting any type of treatment for it? It might be really helpful for you. In that instance, it would be more like a coaching session, you know, that, you know, you're just seeing some things, you're bringing it to somebody's attention. It's not a big deal. It's not a disciplinary issue or any of those kinds of things. It's simply a matter of being helpful. And then you would be in the firefighter's, the ball would be in their court as to whether they do anything with it or not. And if the problems are more severe and they're creating real problems in the workplace, either related to not completing tasks, making impulsive errors, showing poor judgment, significant social problems with with number of different people, creating disturbance in the fire station, impulsivity that results in accidents or dangerous situations for people. You know, obviously, these are the kinds of things that you have to do something about as an administrator. You can't simply wait for someone to get help on their own. You know, in those situations, usually you have one of two strategies available. One is a straightforward disciplinary approach. If somebody isn't performing at work, you do what you would do with any employee who is demonstrating behavior that is resulting in unsatisfactory job performance. And that's certainly a reasonable approach. Another approach, which might be more, in some instances, might be more constructive, or in some cases, depending upon your, these things spill over into the legal realm. Sometimes a legal advisor will suggest a fitness for duty examination, an administrator may insist on a fitness for duty examination in certain instances where the job performance problems appear to be related to an underlying psychiatric problems such as attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. In those situations, an administrator may require that an employee undergo a psychological or psychiatric examination to determine if the disorder is present and if this disorder is likely to create significant work performance problems or safety problems. And during the fitness for duty examination, then the doctor can make treatment recommendations and say, you know, these are the things I would recommend you do. But regardless of that, the doctor would also make a determination as to whether or not the employee can work safely and effectively. And if they can't, then they would be unfit for duty and wouldn't be able to work until the firefighter addressed some of the concerns either through treatment or whatever other means were available to them.
Gary, I don't know a whole lot about the intricacies of the disorder, but I'm inclined to think that ADD and ADHD is what I would call highly treatable. Is that fair?
There's a range of treatability, and some individuals can be very effectively treated with medication. I mean, I've heard some individuals say basically change their lives, and yes, but not everybody. I can't can't be treated completely with everyone, or some of the symptoms can be treated, but not some of the others. And some of the social issues, for example, are probably harder to treat. Sometimes individuals with ADHD develop oppositional behavior or personality characteristics, in part, either it's actually part of the disorder itself, or it's a manifestation of the types of interactions that children have with school teachers and people in authority, because they're in the habit of acting out, and then they get into trouble, and then they get into those situations. But in any event, no, I don't think it would be accurate to say everyone or can be treated, or that it's necessarily highly treatable in everyone. But in many individuals, it is highly treatable, and certainly every person with ADHD should be given an opportunity to see how well they respond to treatment.
Okay. April, were you looking to chime in there?
I was just going to mention that I did a fitness for duty for someone who was having a lot of the behavioral problems that we're describing, and through the assessment, I recognized that he had attention deficit disorder and suggested that he get an evaluation for medications. And I also suggested that he go to a therapist who specializes in dealing with clients with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder in order to learn some of those things that he just missed out on because of his inattentiveness, meaning he was a fairly impulsive kind of person. So he worked with this therapist on really learning some ways to, like, stop his mouth before it got him into trouble in some ways. And just really worked with the therapist and with the medications. And last I heard, he was doing really well. And had he not had the fitness for duty, I think that because he hadn't been identified as ADHD when he was in school, and wasn't being treated for it, I think that he may have gotten into some pretty significant disciplinary problems had that not been identified. So sometimes it is treatable. There are times, however, like Gary was saying, that I don't think that it's that I think that things develop. Like some kids that have real severe ADHD, especially with the hyperactivity, have a real hard time making friends because other kids who don't have it get frustrated with their behaviors. They can't sit and play a game. They can't take turns. They don't know how to listen to someone else without interrupting because they can't. And so pretty soon they find themselves getting into trouble a lot, being socially isolated, or they get themselves into hanging out with kids that are not doing well in life, and they learn some of these behaviors that are more problematic, that aren't really completely due to the ADHD, but are also due to some personality development or just bad attitude kinds of issues. So I think that that is another thing that interferes when people are being treated. And that's why psychotherapy can also help. Medications are really important, but I also believe that people who have psychotherapists who know about ADHD can really teach people skills. It sounds like those of us in the panel who have ADD, we have learned ways, but we had supportive parents and supportive mentors and supportive teachers who were able to kind of encourage us in those directions. Some people don't have that in their life, and I think it's important that as adults they have somebody that can kind of retrain them in ways to help themselves rather than to just give up.
Well, this has certainly been a very enlightening podcast for me, and I hope also for the listeners. I'd like to thank our guests, Dr. Gary Fischler and Dr. April Levesque from Gary L. Fischler & Associates. They're consulting and forensic psychologists located in Minneapolis. I'd like to thank Neil Shostrom, a firefighter with the Roseville Fire Department, and Chief Will Wall from the Williamsport, Maryland Fire Department, and also a career firefighter with the Hagerstown Fire Department. So thanks to all of you for the gift of your time and helping the fire service to better understand attention deficit disorder and attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. I'm going to turn it back to Pete Matthews from firehouse.com.
again, yes, thank you very much for joining us. This was a great topic. Lots to absorb, but something that could probably affect everybody in every station in the U.S. So, everyone, thanks for joining us. If you do have any questions for Chief Gassaway here in the Leader's Toolbox, please send us an email to podcast@firehouse.com. Thank you very much, and we'll see you on the radio next month.
Okay. Again, thanks to all of our guests.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.